I went through 18 years of public school, 4 years of college, and 4 years of graduate school without ever writing one single word on a personal computer. So as I was settling into my profession and beginning to work on my very first sermons, I did it exactly the same way I'd written dozens, hundreds of pages of philosophy papers. I would start with a legal pad and write in longhand, since I never liked writing in cursive very much. Knowing, however, that I'd have to edit a lot, I would leave 4 blank lines between each line of hand-lettered text. On it would go for pages and pages and pages. I'd pause at points, go back and edit, scratch out certain words, insert others, add sentences, often with arrows and asterisks indicating where they fit in, strike whole lines. Now, I know some of you don't believe that ministers ever actually leave anything out of a sermon. I'd tear out pages, cut others, and tape them in elsewhere into the text, staple new lines on top of old ones. By the time I'd finish, or stop, or be forced to wrap up by an imminently impending Sunday morning, I'd have a battered and worn dog-eared text that looked one part manuscript, one part hieroglyphics, and one part Rorschach ink block test. And of course, it was thoroughly and completely illegible, not anywhere close to ready for prime time. So then came the next step. I take my trusty legal pad, sit down at a typewriter, roll in the first page, and engage in what I fondly, well, actually not very fondly, refer to as the hunt, peck, and cuss method. Tap, 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 return, and repeat. Stop, pull out the pungent bottle of whiteout, paint over my errors, then start again. A long time later, I'd emerge with a manuscript that I was only then ready to begin to read, to remember, to become intimately familiar with in preparation for actual delivery. So, when a few years into my career, I finally acquired my first ever desktop computer, it was very modestly helpful. You see, I knew how to write in a particular way, had a visceral, physical experience with the writing process that necessitated a pen. Always black, of course, and a legal pad, yellow or white, because I am nothing if not flexible. With my back to my computer top, with my credenza top computer, I'd sit at my desk writing, scratching out, literally cutting and taping and stapling. Only after I was completely done would I then be ready to fire up the old computer, create a blank green screen with a solitary flashing cursor, and then set about slowly, laboriously to key in my text. Finally finished, I'd figure out all over again how to send it to my blazing fast dot matrix printer that would spit out a manuscript. Someone in my congregation laughed at my process, at the utter absurdity, the inefficiency of using a computer as little more than a fancy typewriter. But I explained, you don't understand. I'm just not comfortable writing on a computer. I can't sustain my thought process. I can't be creative. I can't transition to an electronic experience and be able to do what I need to do. I know what works for me. I know how I need things to be. I can't imagine ever, I think I actually said this, I can't ever imagine feeling comfortable enough to write a whole sermon on a computer. Oh, I was a foolish young minister. So much easier to recognize than all the ways I am now a foolish aging minister. Still in my 20s, the ink on my seminary degree hardly dry. The world in the middle of a technological explosion. And I was already stuck in my ways. Convinced I couldn't change, shouldn't really ever even try to change. I knew what I was comfortable with, knew what I was uncomfortable with, and was determined to keep within my confined comfort zone. You can laugh at my absurdity. It is, after all, the obviously appropriate response. Can you imagine someone who, at an early age, learned how things are supposed to be and decided that was just how they always needed to be? Embracing the comfort of the familiar, of the tried, and of the true. Rejecting the discomfort of a new way, the hard learning, and maintaining carefully, narrowly drawn boundaries of a comfort zone barely broad enough for a single occupant. A little like the guy we saw in the cartoon earlier sitting in his box. Anyone here, by chance, have a similar story? Anyone here able to look back and laugh at your own set ways? Your own insistence on doing things the way that is most familiar? Anyone here aware of ways in which you've stayed with the tried and the true because, well, it's just too much of a hassle to do it in some new way? Writing in her remarkably innovative mid-19th century novel, Jane Eyre, Charlotte Bronte has her eponymous heroine reflect, "My world for some years had been in Lowood. My experience had been of its rules and systems. Now I remembered that the real world was wide and that a varied field of hopes and fears, of sensations and excitements, awaited those who had the courage to go forth into its expanse, to seek real knowledge of life amidst its perils." Oh, that sounds great. A wider world full of possibilities, out beyond the boundaries of rules and systems. That world where we relinquish easy comfort and the trusty reliability of pens and legal pads and embark on the wonder-filled adventure of changing. Right? The romantic poet and abolitionist James Russell Lowell wrote it in a bold call to let go of the old ways. New occasions, Lowell insisted, new occasions teach new duties. Time makes ancient good uncouth. They must upward still and onward who would keep abreast of truth. If that bold assertion doesn't make you a little uncomfortable, then you just may not be hearing it. We like the old duties, the ancient good, the truth preserved in the writings and ways of the past. Well, at least I can say I like the old duties, the ancient good, the truth preserved in at least some increasingly carefully edited writings and ways of the past. Henry David Thoreau was born 200 years ago this month. Many of us know by now that Thoreau always talked a much better game about the call of the wilderness than he ever actually lived. He aggrandized a sojourn in the woods within walking distance of his mama's cooking and the other amenities in the nearby village. At the end of Walden, he remarks on what can happen, about what can happen even out in the woods. It's remarkable how easily and insensibly we fall into a particular route and make a beaten path for ourselves. I had not lived there a week before my feet wore a path from my door to the pond side, and though it is 5 or 6 years since I trod it, it is still quite distinct. Thoreau goes on to concede the surface of the earth is soft and impressible by the feet of people. And so with the paths which the mind travels, making for, he recognizes, ruts of tradition and conformity. Why are there so many cartoons and other humorous expressions addressing the notion of the comfort zone? How is it that that simple image of Linus clutching his blanket can be so evocative for us? How is it that Hobbes is able to talk Calvin into giving up the death-defying plunge down the mountain and instead retreat inside beside the fire for a hot mug of cocoa and marshmallows? Because we all like to be comfortable. We all like to be comfortable. That's why next week we're going to celebrate and appreciate comfort. We all like to be comfortable in our habits, in our thinking, in our ways of seeing ourselves, in our perspectives, in our opinions. We all like to be comfortable. And we all know, at least implicitly, if not explicitly, that between us and an expanded comfort zone, between us and new ways of understanding things, between us and new ways of thinking and acting, there almost always lies some level of discomfort. The embarrassment of awkwardness. The pain of stretching. The confusion of not knowing the right, helpful thing to do. The irritation of relinquishment. The feeling of loss as if things that mattered to us, things that we liked and appreciated and even cherished, are being taken away from us. So naturally we resist. Naturally, we get defensive. We cling to the way it has always been. Well, you'll be relieved to know this then not so old dog did finally learn a new trick. In time, more out of necessity than choice, I did start writing on a computer. I found my way past at least some of my frustrations and impediments, and now cannot imagine going back to that old way. From start to finish, it is all done electronically. And only at the very end do I ever hit print and see a final manuscript that I still edit by hand. Just call me Mr. Modern Minister. A tech-savvy rev. actually, now my newer colleagues, those foolish, trusting, hip, wired kids of the cloth, are preaching their sermons from tablets. They never even print it out. They just saunter right up into the pulpit with their fancy devices and confidently move from screen to screen regarding a paper copy as barely beyond the days of the scrolls. Of this I am absolutely certain. I could never, I will never be comfortable with that.